And welcome to the Midday for a Wednesday. I'm Norman Gilliland in our Buck studio, which means live music, a real treat today, with Joanna Weinholz, who is the, I'm going to say, almost brand new harpist with the Madison Symphony. In fact, we were just talking about that audition process. Welcome to the Midday, Joanna.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's atmospheric here, being in the studio just with you and your harp in this kind of semi-darkened room, kind of a rarefied environment. But it seems particularly appropriate for harp somehow.
Yeah, I think that this will be a lovely hour here in the studio.
Now, this harp, it's a beautiful instrument to look at, and I've, of course, overheard some of it, too. But you went about getting it in a rather unusual way.
Right. So harps are not, they're not cheap. I'm sure, you know, just looking at it, a lot of the carving is hand done. The mechanism is very complex. We have seven pedals, and they each have three notches. Those reach all the way through the harp, so it's not just the strings you're dealing with. It's kind of like its own little machine. And so, unlike school and universities and things where you can have scholarships and then you can go study in these wonderful places, they don't really have the same kind of thing with instruments. So I crowdsourced to raise the money for a portion of my instrument. So I put up a video on YouTube and I made a whole site. And I got donations from people. Some people were strangers who, you know, it was shared on a Facebook page, which was shared on another Facebook page or something like that, and was able to raise the money to buy this harp. And when I went, I tried every harp they had at Lyon and Healy in Chicago. And my former teacher, Judy Lohman, came with me, and we sifted through every single instrument that they had in their showroom until we landed on this one, which is specific to me. Everyone's playing is different. They need a slightly different instrument.
Yes. I mean, I've heard this from string players, of course, that they go around the country and try out instruments at one shop or another, and then there's one that just somehow, if they're lucky, speaks to them. Well, what's the difference among harps, these machines as you describe them?
Well, it is an acoustic instrument. I say it's a machine because it has a lot of moving parts, but fundamentally it is made of wood. So any tree that you find is going to have a slightly different grain, is going to have a slightly different acoustic resonance when you're playing. And sometimes on harps, the tension is different. So you can play on a harp that feels very loose. Specifically, older harps sometimes tend to feel loose, or double strung harps have to be loose.
Is that a good thing?
It's just different. Sometimes it might be easier to play, but you can always make a big sound if there's not a lot of tension on the instrument. Sometimes you can't control it the same way. So this particular instrument for me is a nice balance where I feel like I can phrase, I can put a little more nuance into it than some of the other harps that I tried.
I suppose that's something that's easy for a non-harpist to overlook, is the importance of the resonance. I mean, we see the strings and we see the what we call the frame, but we don't necessarily think that that frame contributes to the sound of the harp.
Right. So the way the harp is built, there's a sound, a chamber in the back. We call it the sound board, and it's hollow, and that is where the sound, it reverberates in there, and then it expands out of the instrument. And so, you know, the soundboard is pretty important for the sound of the harp, and there are just tons of variables when something is made of an organic product, you know, like wood.
Yes, certainly the original product, the original material can be a variable, and then the atmosphere in which it's being played.
Right.
With wood in particular, can do all kinds of fascinating things, I'm sure.
Right. And when you get a new harp, you have to break it in. So you have this instrument, and you've picked it out. It's been shipped to you. And then the harp sort of develops along with the musician based on how you break it in. You know, it's important when you first get a new instrument to be playing it a lot, to be taking good care of it. All of these different things kind of season the instrument in different ways.
Well, would you like to play something on this wonderful harp of yours?
Yes. So I'll be playing the Forêt, une châtelaine en sauteur. This is a pretty standard piece in
Written,
our repertoire.
Originally for harp.
Yes.
Châtelaine en sauteur by Gabriel Fauré. And of course, you have to love those glissons there. That's kind of the classic harp sound, isn't it?
There are a lot of classic harp moments in there with harmonics and glisses and things like that.
You get those nice little bell tones going in there.
Yeah.
It still seems like a really improbable instrument.
It's not necessarily always the easiest to, you know, cart around or even play, but you know, it's really beautiful.
And how about its voice? With large concert halls now, solo harp, do you play that unamplified?
So it depends. It depends what you're playing. Sometimes in concertos, people, they really feel strongly that you shouldn't amplify it. But the problem is sometimes, depending on the way that that concerto is orchestrated, a lot of the things that we work really hard on are lost. So I personally don't necessarily think that it's always a bad thing to amplify the harp slightly if you have a good sound technician, and you have to see based on the hall and the piece that you're playing. You do want to be heard when you're a soloist. We work for hours on these pieces, and it's sort of similar to guitar in a way where you would just lose so much of the music. But that being said, sometimes harps can project more than you think in an orchestra, and sometimes project more when you're a soloist.
What are some of the pieces, you know, well-known pieces that have harp parts in them that we might easily lose if we're not listening very carefully? Is there one in the 1812 overture?
I'm not sure. I think that in orchestra, if you're playing in the ensemble, you should not be mic'd. I think that you should be able to produce enough sound where you're carrying. However, if it's something like you're a soloist, it's different. If you're the playing the concerto, there will be soft moments that are fast and things like that where you're not necessarily going to be heard otherwise. However, if you're playing in the ensemble, that a lot of times we just have to put a lot of muscle in there. you know, very many Ravel and Debussy pieces you know, are very famous for their harp parts. Those two composers specifically wrote really beautifully for harp in orchestra. So it's always a treat when we are playing a piece where the composer did his research or her research on the how the harp works and how to write for it.
But there are still some of these instances. I would guess most of them would be latter day, more 20th century. Obviously, if you're playing like a Bois Dieu harp concerto, that's not a problem, you know, 18th century, early 19th. But as you get later and the orchestras, I guess, and the instruments get bigger and louder.
Right, especially when we're playing and we're competing against a sea of strings and very loud brass sections, you know, and the whole, when the tutti orchestra is at forte, you know, don't listen for the harp then as much as these softer, more ethereal moments. Sometimes we really project through.
Are there some also that have just very fleeting harp moments and you're kind of like counting measures for a long time and then, oh, here's my glissande or whatever?
Right. Mahler symphonies, sometimes we are sitting for ages until we play. There are operas that they do at the Met where I know the harpist will go see a movie in between because they are playing
peace, we hope.
At the very beginning and the very end, literally enough time to go have a many-course meal or to see a full film, you know. So there are those moments where we wait for a long time for one thing and you really don't want to miss it.
No, that's true. If the movie just runs a little late,
right?
You know,
right.
It's a problem. You have performed a three-part work.
Yes.
The King David Sonata for solo harp by a Canadian composer, Sroel Irving Glick, 20th century composer.
Yep.
Who actually wrote this work for the aforementioned Judy Lohman, your harp teacher. And it's called the King David Sonata because King David was known for his harp artistry. That's one thing about your instrument. It goes back a long way in one form or another.
Yeah, it does. So David wrote the Psalms, famous for writing the Psalms, but he also played the harp, like the famous Leonard Cohen song David played and it pleased the Lord.
Hallelujah, yes.
Yeah, so he played the harp. And this piece, Judy asked him to write a piece for her, and he was inspired by David and wrote this three-movement piece. So the first movement is called David in the Fields, and it is about David's time as a young shepherd. So this is the first phase of his life where he's a shepherd.
All right, so we'll hear that first in the fields from the King David Sonata by Sroel Irving Glick, and my guest is Joanna Weinholz. Thank you. Those last notes have their due, don't you?
Right.
Can't let them get cut off there. That was the first of the three movements of the King David Sonata for solo harp by the Canadian composer Cyril Irving Glick, written in 1998, I believe, in the fields. And we were talking about orchestral performance for harp, and you're going to be performing tonight, Joanna.
Yes, I am, with Middleton Community Orchestra.
You'll be performing in the Glazunov Violin Concerto in A. How's the harp part in that?
I've got a moment that is very beautiful with our soloist, Tim Camps, in the second movement, where we're sort of playing off of each other, and it's really lovely.
Very effective, those little kind of duets, especially in the slow movements of concertos. That concert begins tonight at 7:30, Middleton Performing Arts Center in Middleton, with the Middleton Community Orchestra. We'll have our 12:30 quiz question right after this on WPR.
Support for WPR comes from The Bolt Company, providing professional construction services to customers in a variety of markets nationwide for more than 125 years. More about markets served, featured projects, and news is at bolt.com. Support also comes from Foreign Car Specialists, located at 6805 Seabold Road on Madison's west side. foreign car specialists, dedicated to providing expertise in import car service for more than 50 years.
Of yesterday's 12:30 quiz question, it went like this. An ancient oak in this sylvan area is said to have been a hiding place for a famous outlaw. So what sylvan area is that? Also quite famous. That would be Sherwood Forest. And it's the ancient oak there that Robin Hood may, at least according to a legend, did use as a hideout, one of his hideouts. And the oak is a good 800 or so years old, so it lines up that way. That was yesterday's question, and here is today's, a music question. It goes like this. Between 1928 and 1934, five hit songs mentioned this family in their lyrics. Very prominent American family. What is it? Between 1928 and 1934, five hit songs mentioned this family in their lyrics. If you can identify the family in the next 27 minutes, you might win the prize today. Email your answer to us at midday@wpr.org, or you can phone 1-800-442-7106 and give your answer to Mark, and we'll see who wins the prize, as usual, from among all correct respondents. And now more from my guest, Joanna Weinholz. She's the almost brand new, 5 months going on six now, harpist with the Madison Symphony. And she has been performing this sonata by the Canadian composer, Cyril Irving Glick. It's called the King David Sonata. We heard the first movement called In the Field, celebrating David's life early on as a shepherd. And then before there were the Goldberg variations used for lullaby, there was a couple of thousand years before that, there was David playing for Saul.
Right. So that that takes us to the second movement, which is called David and Saul. When Saul can't sleep at night, he has these nightmares. David comes and plays for King Saul. So this... This second movement is sort of dreamy and free and, not necessarily jam-packed with notes, but it's really beautiful just on its own, I think. I think of the three, it's my favorite.
Well, okay. We'll risk anticlimax with the third then, but here we go with David and Saul from the King David Sonata. That movement looked like it used the full range of the harp. I'm not sure about that. Did it use the lowest, very lowest note? But I know it was all
very
the way
close.
Up in the...
Yeah, very close.
At least one away. Mm-hmm. That was the movement David and Saul from the King David Sonata by the Canadian composer Cyril Irving Glick, who was inspired by the Psalms of David in the Old Testament, and David, a fabled harpist. And we're working our way, or playing our way, in your case, through the sonata. We'll hear the final movement from it. And before that, I'll repeat our 12:30 quiz question right after this here on WPR.
When we last talked to Senator Dick Durbin, he was trying to pass an immigration bill and struggling to work with the White House.
I've talked to this president within the last few weeks on days when I thought, good, we've got a path to getting this done, and done the right way. Then 2 days later, it completely blew up in my face.
That effort failed. Now we ask the senator, where does DACA go from here? This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Support for WPR comes from The Bolt Company, providing professional construction services to customers in a variety of markets nationwide for more than 125 years. More about markets served, featured projects, and news is at bolt.com. Support also comes from Farley's House of Pianos, offering new, used, and restored pianos. Rebuilding heirloom pianos on-site in the Farley's Restoration Workshop. Showroom and workshop tour information is at farleyspianos.com.
Here's our quiz question again. Between 1928 and 1934, five hit songs mentioned this family in their lyrics, a very prominent American family, and somehow their name seemed to come up often during the Depression when songs were written. So here's the question again. Between 1928 and 1934, five hit songs mention this family in their lyrics. And what family, prominent American family, must that be? You have about 16 minutes to answer that question. If you get it right, there's a prize that might go out your way. Email your answer to us, as usual, at midday@wpr.org, or you can phone 1-800-442-7106 and give your answer to Mark, and we'll see who wins that prize from among all correct respondents. And now back to my guest today, Joanna Weinholz, the harpist with the Madison Symphony. Do they ever add a couple of extra harps for some of those works?
Yeah. There are a number of pieces where it's two harps. I think we had maybe two this season. There will be more coming up next season with two harps. One very famous piece, Berlioz Symphony Fantastique.
I knew you were going to say Berlioz. He liked big orchestras.
You know, I think he once wrote that his ideal orchestra would have, like, you know, three or four or five times the number of harpists that we normally do in a standard orchestra. So in the dance, the waltz in Symphony Fantastique, there's two harp parts, and they really are individual parts. Sometimes we just kind of double certain parts, but there are composers who wrote distinct parts for a piece. Another example is Prelude to Afternoon of a Fawn.
Oh, the
Debussy.
Sure, yes. Very harpy, isn't it?
Very harpy, and both first and second harp are extremely important and do different things and play off of each other. It's different. We sometimes get used to playing alone in orchestra,
well,
and then you have
a
partner, and you have to kind of adjust and work as a team, which is something that we don't always get to do.
How does a young person start playing the harp? I mean, because you don't have the Suzuki option, do you? Or are there 1/8 harps?
Actually,
are there? Are there?
I started with Suzuki harp.
Did you?
And in Cincinnati, Ohio. So there is an adaptation of the Suzuki method for harp. But most people start just having heard the instrument somewhere. I was 5 when I first heard harp that I was aware of, and I told my mom that was what I wanted to do. That was my dream. So she said, okay. <You know? laughs> and she told me if I practiced, she would pay for the lessons. But if I didn't practice, then I would have to go back to piano.
Good deal.
So, it was a pretty good deal. And it, you know, helped me stick with it there for the first while until I really started loving it later on. But there are, you know, Suzuki method really is a great method for harp, starting out in the same way that it is for strings and guitar. Most of the time it comes from a child or adult who just has always kind of been fascinated by the sound, and then kind of take it upon themselves. There are some parents who decide for their child they want them to take harp lessons.
Really?
But a lot of times, some parents. But
interesting choice.
I think a lot of times children really are touched by the sound and want to take lessons.
Now on to the third and final movement of this sonata, the King David Sonata, by Canadian composer Cyril Irving Glick. And in this one, David is the king.
David is king now. So this is a totally, totally different picture of David. And it's clear from the very beginning, this movement is rhythmic. And there are sort of lyrical sections within it. But on the whole, this is David as a very powerful figure. Still maybe reflective, but, you know, he's really got some things to do. And got to keep to that chugging rhythm. So you'll hear that throughout, and has a powerful ending and powerful sections throughout.
David the King. Thank you. final movement, David the King from the King David Sonata for Solo Harp by Cyril Irving Glick. I imagine it takes a little while to work up the calluses to play that one.
Yeah, it does. When I first played this piece, I think in both of my thumbs, I had these blisters from ripping those short, loud glisses.
Right.
Salzedo was a harpist who kind of started using glisses in different ways. And Glick definitely, in his third movement, uses glisses in all different ways.
Well, that was quite something to see, and I hope quite something to hear out there, too. I'm sure it was, in fact. My guest this hour has been Joanna Weinholz. She's the harpist with the Madison Symphony and prominent from the back sometimes of the stage. But
yeah, you can watch for me and listen for me back there. I think I'm playing in just about every concert the rest of the season at the MSO and certainly next year. So,
well, great to have you front and center for the midday today.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me.